Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. What a difference a week makes, folks. Last week, we all gave Monday Night Raw an A+, a very rare A+. And this week, I don't think they're going to come anywhere near close to that. Let's first say, let's get the main news out of the way, and that is that two people are injured on the Raw roster. Neither one of them were injured last night. Both of them actually suffered these injuries prior to last night, and the angle was to just make it look as though they were injured last night. First one being Kevin Owens, who we'll get to. Obviously, it was made to look as though Kevin Owens was injured by Judgment Day. And then Liv Morgan, who also had suffered an injury supposedly last week that isn't severe. She was able to get thrown around a little bit last night, unlike Kevin Owens. But they wanted to write her off for a little while. And so she's been written off as well on the injured reserve, so to speak. So we have two of the WWE alumni, or not alumni, the roster down in Kevin Owens and Liv Morgan. So this whole thing started with the Judgment Day already in the ring and bragging about how Rhea Ripley's the champion, Finn Balor's soon to be the champion, Damian Priest has Money in the Bank, and now Dominic Mysterio holds the championship belt, and Dominic came out on his own and presented his own video package. Here's the deal. The Judgment Day is getting a really huge push now. They're definitely doing a lot with the Judgment Day, and they're trying to make them their top heel faction. There's no question about it. But they're running into a roadblock, and the roadblock is only really Rhea Ripley can talk on the mic. And that's causing them some issues. So they give Rhea Ripley the mic more often than not. Dominic Mysterio tries. Of course, he gets booed out of the building. This time, instead of just letting them boo Dominic out of the building, they sent out Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens, who I just mentioned, was injured previously to this show. So they set up a match between Dominic Mysterio and Sami Zayn later in the night for the North American Championship. And I guess this was set up in a way to just write Kevin Owens off of television for a little bit. I don't know how severe it is. Later on, he said he may have a broken rib. Maybe he does. I don't know. It didn't come from anything last night, but we'll see how severe his injury is. You'll notice nobody really touched him last night. Anyway, this segment, I don't know. You know, it left me a little cold after last week, and you have this really great, strong opening segment. There just came this sort of a weak segment with people who aren't really so good on the mic. Then you had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, who are both good on the mic, come out. And all that really did is undermine how bad the rest of them are on the mic, with the exception of possibly Rhea Ripley. And there was never really a time when this felt real, unfortunately. This is a big problem with Raw last night. There was never really a time when most of the stuff that was happening felt even remotely real. There was times last night when Dominic Mysterio was fully smiling when he was trying to talk about, I want respect. And there was times when Damian Priest looked bored. Finn Balor looked like he might be suffering from colitis, wandering around. Rhea Ripley is the only one who had any feel to her at all genuine feel to her. And when Sammy and KO go ripping on the mic and you can't in any way retaliate because you just can't, then it looks, I don't know, it feels weak. If this is going to be your top heel faction, they're going to step it up. They're going to have to step it up because it's not working. You put them up against the tag team champions in a little bit of a barking session, and it wasn't competitive. Heel factions are the heels that can use the mic and really use the mic to their advantage. I don't think Judgment Day has that advantage with the possible exception of Rhea Ripley. So, Mike, the opening segment was okay, but I'm not going to give it anything better than that.
Yeah, it was okay. And it's not Dom's fault that he's not bad on the mic. It's just that they don't want to let him talk, you know. If they would let him talk, he might get better on the mic if the fans would let him talk. But here's the deal with Dominic, though. He was a snit before he got the title, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be insufferable now.
There's no question he's one of their top heels, and there's no question that he's not terrible on the mic. My problem with Dominic last night, and there's one good thing with Dominic. He's starting to look like he's picking up a little bit of weight. He's starting to look like he's bulking up a little bit. Not a ton, but a little bit. And he's looking a little more whatever. He's suiting his part a little better. He's got to work on facial expressions. I know that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are probably your friends. And I know when they're saying crazy stuff like, well, you're right, you're not getting any respect, and we figured the reason out. Nobody respects you. It's very easy to crack a smile, but you kind of can't. He's got to work on that some. He definitely has to work on that some. The rest of Judgment Day, like I said, Finn Balor and Damian Priest on the mic just leave me cold. It's not, I don't know. It's not working. Those two guys are not working for me as far as getting over on the mic. They're fine in the ring. But getting over on the mic, not so much, Tom. Segment was okay. Sets up Sami Zayn and Dominic, but I mean, very clearly, you're not going to have Sami Zayn win the North American title when he's a tag team champion, so it really didn't feel that special.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty predictable that, you know, Sami Zayn wasn't winning, and to keep that heat on Dominic, of course he's going to, because to make him even more annoying and for the fans to, you know, give him that heat, he's got to hang on to that belt. But the segment fell pretty flat. And, you know, compared to last week, I usually don't like to do this, but compared to last week, it fell, you know, opening segments fell super flat. And it just, like you said, didn't feel special. And to be honest with you, Kevin Owens going on a tirade and screaming into the microphone to get his point across just feels Memphis, like Memphis wrestling to me. And it's getting tiresome.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are liking this Rageaholic thing, but I don't even think he's doing it that well. Because when you're that way, you start out kind of soft-spoken, and then you work yourself into a frenzy. He does it like snap of a finger. He goes from 0 to 10. I don't know. Like I said, I think we saw a much better opening segment than this, Todd, but it was passable.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with this whole thing with the Judgment Day last night, looks like the Damian Priest and company look like they were bored except for Rhea in that segment.
Yeah, I mean, Dominic did a good job when he came out and did his own video package. That was cool, but I don't know. It just left me a little flat. Anyway, we have Becky Lynch versus Zoe Stark as the opening match. Now, this is where I'm going to start to pick on things a little bit, and I hope you guys bear with me because it's not really picking on the wrestler. It's picking on the bookers. You literally made this match. If Becky Lynch wins, she gets a shot at Trish Stratus at SummerSlam. If Becky Lynch does not win, she has to tattoo "Thank You, Trish" on her body. Well, why didn't he just go for the jugular vein and say if Becky Lynch wins, she gets a shot at Trish Stratus at SummerSlam, and if Becky Lynch loses, she's executed in the middle of the ring. She's beheaded. You may as well. Because when you do something like that, you already gave away who's winning this match. On top of it, here's SummerSlam in 2 weeks, and Becky Lynch doesn't have an opponent. Gee, I wonder if she's going to win this match. So instead of doing that, Einsteins, why didn't you say Becky Lynch is in fact going to get a shot at Trish Stratus at SummerSlam, win or lose with Zoe Stark? However, if Zoe wins, Trish Stratus picks the stipulation. If Becky Lynch wins, Becky Lynch picks the stipulation. Then at least you'd say, well, it is possible that Becky Lynch might lose, so Trish Stratus picks the stipulation. That's possible. Trish Stratus might interfere, cost another win from Becky, and she gets to pick the stipulation. That's certainly possible. It's not possible that Becky Lynch is going to tattoo "Thank You, Trish" on her body. So all the good hard work that Becky Lynch and Zoe Stark put into that match, and they did put a lot of good work in that match. This was a good match. It's for nothing, because the ignorance of your booking, you've already revealed what's going to happen. Everybody in the world knows it. There's not one person above the age of 7 that doesn't know that Becky Lynch is going to win this match and go on to SummerSlam. So why did you even bother making that stipulation? Just say they're having the match. But Trish Stratus can pick the stipulation if Zoe wins. That way, at least it's in doubt a little bit, Mike. This way, I mean, you may as well say she's going to be beheaded if she doesn't win, because that's how much chance it would have been either way. Very silly, and it wastes a really good match.
Yeah, I mean, it was Becky Lynch made basically, this was a career, almost a career-making match for Zoe Stark. Because she made her look like $1 million, you know, and that's what you want from one of your veterans for one of your girls that you have big plans for. So, and obviously they have big plans for Zoe Stark, obviously, right? So, and you're right about this whole stipulation thing. You know, the stipulation should not come before the match. The stipulation should have come if Zoe Stark wins, I get to make a stipulation. All right? That's when the stipulation – then you can come with this silly stipulation about tattooing. If I win the match, you got to tattoo, "Thank You, Trish" on your body. But you could have also Becky Lynch come up with just maybe something like, okay, if I have to do that, if I win, you have to dye your hair red.
Why don't they just, you know what, never do the tattoo stipulation, because no one's going to do that. Just say, if I win the match, you're right, the stipulation comes afterwards. So Trish Stratus says, okay, if Zoe Stark wins, I get to pick the stipulation. Becky Lynch says, if I win, I get to pick the stipulation. Then you know what you do. You have Zoe Stark win again, thanks to Trish Stratus being, you know, interfering constantly, and have Trish Stratus make the stipulation, if I win this match, you have to acknowledge that me by saying, "Thank you, Trish," on this microphone, kneeling before me. That's possible. You're not going to tattoo something on your body, so you don't do that. See, when you go too far like that, Tom, then you've just given away the ending, and there's no reason to even watch the match. So all this good stuff that Zoe Stark's doing, all these 2.5 counts that could have been like, whoa, and been exciting, are now not exciting. All the false finishes are no longer exciting because you don't fall for one of those false finishes because you know damn well Becky Lynch's not tattooing something on her body.
You're 100% correct, and you know I enjoyed the match. It was a good match. They work well together, but this reminded me again, of Mid-South when they would have the hair versus hair match, or hair versus loser leave town match, when you know, like, they had that match the week before and that guy's bald and the you know what I mean? Like, it's gimmicky. And to tattoo something, to have one of the stipulations to tattoo, thank you, Trish, on their body, that was silly. That was just silly. And not one
all
fan
you had
is
to do
was going
simply
to
say, look, whoever wins this match gets to pick the stipulation. If Zoe Stark wins, Zoe Stark or Trish Stratus gets to pick. If Becky Lynch wins, Becky Lynch gets to pick. Stipulation could have been very simple. If Becky Lynch wins, Becky Lynch says Zoe Stark's banned from ringside. I don't want her anywhere near ringside. Trish Stratus wins. She could have said anything from you have to kneel before me and say thank you to it's a handicap match between Zoe Stark and myself and you. There was a lot of things you could have done with it, but when you make it, you got to tattoo something on your body. You know that's not happening. So every time we had a false finish where it looked like Zoe Stark was going to win, very clearly it wasn't exciting because we already knew she was going to kick out. We already knew it. So you destroyed the good work that these women did in this match. You destroyed the excitement of the match by basically telling us the ending. It's the equivalent of going to a murder mystery and somebody tells you who done it before the movie starts. Doesn't mean it's not well acted. Doesn't mean it's not a good movie. It means you foiled it. And that's what the WWE did last night with this match, as far as I'm concerned, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing with the tattooing and everything, the thank you, Trish tattooing, like Tom said, it's sort of silly and it's ruining the spoiler of the match.
Yeah, and there's no question. No question. We then get to, we had the Cody Rhodes moment, right? That's fine. Whatever. You know, he's selling his match with Lesnar. That's fine. There's not much to talk about there. So then it's Sami Zayn for the North American title against Dominic Mysterio. This is the way they kind of wrote off Kevin Owens for a little bit. I don't know how serious this is going to be. I mean, he's going to be going a while. They may strip him of the tag team belt. I don't know. We all knew Dominic wasn't losing the North American title, and we all knew that he's not going to beat Sami Zayn clean. So this is another one where you basically reveal the ending. Sami Zayn's not going to get pinned clean. Dominic's not losing the title. So you know it's going to be a screw job finish. It was a screw job finish. So, and there was a botch or two in this match, by the way, just so you know. Okay match at best. Once again, most of the life was sucked out of it because we already sort of knew what was going to happen, Mike, and that's a problem.
And that's a problem. Yeah, that is a problem. And I mean, this is the second match in a row that they've done this with, and that's a big problem. And look, we don't know about the injury, and I mean, if it's serious enough, they're gonna have to strip them of those titles. And what are they gonna do? Are they gonna hold a tournament or whatever for those titles? If this injury is that serious, right? You know,
yep.
So we got to see what happens with that. And, yeah, and like I said before, Dominic, they have to keep that title on Dominic because he's just insufferable with the title on him.
Yeah, he'll be much better off with that title. There's no question. But Mike's right, two in a row now, Tom, where the ending is really basically handed to you. You already know it before the match starts.
Yeah, and I don't know how serious Kevin Owens' injury is, but I'm hoping it's not, because that's going to lose their momentum of being, you know, of being tag team champions and very popular. And where does Sammy go?
Whoops, I'm sorry. Keep going. Keep going.
I'm not sure how much you heard there, but it's going to get it's. Sammy, and I hope Kevin's not, super injured. I hope he's not going to be out for that long because, you know, they got the tag team belts. They're very popular. if Kevin's going to be gone for a while, then what do you do with Sammy? Sammy can't carry that popularity by himself. He was popular with the Bloodline. Now he's popular with Kevin. He wasn't popular by himself. He wasn't over by himself.
No, that's true. It's true. We'll see what ends up happening with that. It's at this point, we're just speculating, but Kevin Owens did say, I may have a broken rib. Maybe he does. I don't know. What do we get next? We got the Tommaso Ciampa versus Bronson Reed, and this is the one that aggravated me the most. We've already had two in a row where you gave away the ending. Before this match, Tommaso Ciampa tells Shinsuke Nakamura he doesn't expect to see him at ringside. So I wonder if we should expect to see Shinsuke Nakamura at ringside. Why was that necessary? Why was that spot necessary? I want a writer to tell me why that spot was necessary. When Shinsuke Nakamura could have came out, we maybe forgot what happened last week and let the announcers remind us. Well, you know, Shinsuke last week was mad because Tommaso interfered in his match. Yeah, that's all you needed to do. But that's not the only thing that made me angry here, folks. I've met Tommaso Ciampa in person, good guy, great wrestler. There is no question that Tommaso Ciampa is an excellent professional wrestler. But this is what's wrong with wrestling today. Tommaso Ciampa was taught, quite obviously, that it's perfectly acceptable for a 5'10", 190-pound man to stand toe-to-toe with Bronson Reed, who's about 380, and not only throw punches one for one, but win the exchange. He did it on the ring apron. He did it outside the ring. He did it in the ring. And I'm going to tell you, this is the equivalent of, let's say you're fighting Ricochet, and you're 280 pounds, and you do all of Ricochet's moves. Ricochet is going to confront you backstage and say, what are you doing, man? You're making my stuff look irrelevant because if a guy your size can do it, then a guy my size, it's not special. You got to sell that, you know, my stuff is special. Well, why should I if you're not going to sell that I'm stronger than you? Because that's what I'm supposed to be special in. Bronson Reed is supposed to be a powerhouse. So if you can't sell that you can't outpunch him because he's 190 pounds heavier than you and a foot taller, then I don't know what to say. But you're taught wrong. This is the problem with professional wrestling. It's not Tommaso Ciampa's fault. Everybody's doing it now because that's the way they were told. It's silly. I'm watching this and I'm saying, okay, well, Bronson Reed's dead. Bronson Reed's character is dead because if Tommaso Ciampa can outpunch him, then how am I supposed to believe that Otis can't? How am I supposed to believe that Drew McIntyre can't? How am I supposed to believe that Sheamus can't or these guys that are bigger, huh? How am I supposed to believe that? But a week ago, The Miz is outpunching him. You got to change what you sell based upon who you're fighting. You want to go toe-to-toe with The Miz? Do it all day long. You want to go toe-to-toe with Finn Balor? Do it all day long. You can't go toe-to-toe with Drew McIntyre if you're Tommaso Ciampa. You can't go toe-to-toe with Bronson Reed or you can't do it. I know your gimmick is I'm supposed to be this tough psycho. Well, whatever. Then what's Bronson Reed's gimmick supposed to be? I'm not faster than you. I'm not stronger than you. I'm not a better wrestler than you. What am I supposed to be then? That's irritating. It's irritating to watch. And Mike, again, it is not Tommaso Ciampa's fault. This is the way they're being taught, that this is perfectly acceptable. And in my way of thinking, it's not.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And if you think about it, I mean, look, we all the time get on Balor for doing the same thing. And Ciampa and Balor are what? 5 or 6 or 7 years difference in age, right?
Probably,
I mean,
yeah.
Ciampa's in what? Ciampa's in her, his what, mid-30s probably, and Fowler's
yeah.
going to be in his mid-40s soon. So, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, we didn't see this with Eddie Guerrero. We didn't even see this when our friend Rey Jr., Rey Mysterio, you know? Rey Mysterio is not the right idea. He does, when he faces bigger people, he goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 punches to their one, right? That's how it's supposed to be done. You don't just, I'm supposed to be a tough guy. Now, if you're going to say, okay, I would buy that one-for-one punch if you were promoting him like you're promoting, say, what's his name with the Alpha Academy as being pound for pound one of the stronger guys.
I wouldn't even do that. There's no way Chad Gable should be able to stand toe-to-toe with Bronson Reed and exchange a punch for a punch for a punch. If you want to say he's strong and he can pick Bronson Reed up and give him that back suplex, that's fine, because that's what you're promoting. But the punches are not wrestling. Punches, go ahead and get punched in the head by a 290-pound man and then go get punched by a 190-pound man. And on the average, I can tell you that if they're both equally athletic, you'll feel the difference. That's why there's a weight division in boxing, and that's why there's a weight division in UFC and all kinds of fighting sports, is because you can't possibly expect a 170-80-pound guy to throw the same powerful punch that a 280-pound guy is going to throw if they're both equally athletic. Last night, Tommaso Ciampa three times went toe-to-toe. I counted it. I actually looked up the statistics on the phone while I was doing it. So I'm like, look, this is illustrating my point, that they're teaching these wrestlers it's strictly acceptable to go toe-to-toe with guys who are way, way, way bigger than you. So how does that make Bronson Reed look devastating? How does that do that? You see, Tommaso Ciampa's job is to go out there and say, I can't stand toe-to-toe with this guy, but I can out-wrestle him. And I can absorb some of his punishment because I'm tough, but I can't stand toe-to-toe in a fist fight with him. But then again, I got better cardio than him. I got better wrestling knowledge than him. I can wear him down. That's your job. Instead, Tommaso Ciampa says, no, I can stand toe-to-toe with him. Okay, well then what is special about Bronson Reed? What did you sell about Bronson Reed last night that's special? You can go toe-to-toe with him. Apparently you're just as powerful as him. Apparently, you're better cardio than him. You're a better wrestler than him. So in every way, all you did was undermine Bronson Reed. You didn't sell anything. Okay, you lost the match. You lost the match because Shinsuke Nakamura came out, which was as telegraphed as you could possibly have it. But at the end of the day, Bronson Reed doesn't look like he has anything special. See, this is why when they protect people like Gunther, these guys will come at Gunther, and even big guys like Drew McIntyre and stuff will hit him and hit him and hit him, and then he'll chop them and then he'll knock them down. And it's like, wow, Gunther must have a tremendous chop, right? So if Ricochet stands toe-to-toe with him, chop, 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 you're like, okay, well then why in the world should Drew McIntyre have to sell it? That's where the problem comes in, Tom, and that's why this match did not do anything for me.
Yeah, and you know what? I get that if you're standing not standing toe-to-toe, but with, doing an exchange with Bronson Reed, and Bronson Reed, gets stunned and he just, cracks you with a headbutt, that's one thing. Shawn Michaels never stood toe-to-toe with The Undertaker. He would, stick and move. And once The Undertaker caught him, look out. He would run all the way, he'd fly all around the ring. The Undertaker catches him, look out, he's done. And he would somehow slither his way out of it. This is kind of like the same thing. You have to have that kind of, mentality in the ring with Tommaso Ciampa and Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed should be sold as a powerhouse. You're not, a 190-pound man is not going to win a fist fight with a 380-pound man.
No, and this is the deal. If Tommaso Ciampa wants to come flying in and give Bronson Reed 15, 20 quick, punches, like, oh, my God, Tommaso Ciampa's went nuts. Look at him hammering Bronson Reed, who's covering up. He's covering up, and then Reed throws one punch and knocks Ciampa into next week. That's okay. Because then you say, well, you know, Ciampa came in like a little pit bull throwing punches. Reed was able to absorb them, and then when he hit Ciampa with his own, knocked Ciampa into next week. That's okay. But not, oh, hit, back and forth, waiting for the booyah thing when one guy is half your size. I mean, I'm sorry, Todd, but that ruined that match for me.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's just don't work for me either. The big guy trying to, the smaller guy trying to go toe-to-toe with a big guy, it just don't look right.
Anyway, backstage, we have Apollo Crews sighting. Oh, my God, he still is with the WWE. And there's Tozawa. And the Judgment Day show up, Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest. And Tozawa being afraid of Rhea Ripley is actually funny. And once again, I will tell you that Tozawa has the best facial expressions in the WWE. He's brilliant at what he does. And he's accepted his role, and he's excelling at his role. I feel sorry for Apollo Crews because pound for pound, Apollo Crews is probably one of the best overall athletes in the WWE, and he is never going anywhere. He's never going anywhere because he just has no personality at all. It's a shame. He has a zero charisma. Challenges Damian Priest to a fight, so we realize that that's going to be going on a little bit later. Logan Paul and Ricochet, we had Ricochet in the ring. Man, Ricochet's bad on the mic. He's just bad on the mic. Really bad. But he said a couple of things, at least it was halfway decent, like, you know, we've had to travel and we miss our families and everything. You don't have to do that. You just show up when you want to show up. You leave when you want to leave. You're like, you know, you're the pampered, chosen, whatever. And that's why nobody likes you. You didn't pay any dues. You just come in here and all of a sudden you get main evented and you get fast tracked to the top. That made sense. But man, he did it in the worst possible way he could do it. It looked like he was reading it off the back of his hand. And what's tragic about this is, when Logan Paul finally sneak attacks him, Logan Paul, in the very little time that he's been a professional wrestler, has a ton more charisma. He feels a lot more natural. I very greatly Logan Paul had anything written down because a couple of the things that he said, I'm not 100% sure that WWE is real happy with. When he pointed the guy out with the mustache in the front row and said, your problem is you're a virgin, you need to get laid. I'm not sure the WWE knew he was going to say that. Logan Paul clearly has more charisma and clearly has more energy and clearly has a better mic skills than Ricochet. And sadly, at 1.5 times Ricochet's size, he almost has the same athleticism. But Ricochet says stupid things like, every single time I get in this ring, I'm special. I am the most special performer in the WWE, and you're just an egotistical idiot. Well, wait a minute. That's coming from a guy who just declared himself the most special athlete in the WWE. And Logan Paul is egotistical? How can you didn't read that ahead of time and say, wait a minute. Doesn't that make me look egotistical, calling somebody else egotistical? That's dumb. That's a dumb line. Why do I have to say how great I am before saying that somebody else who says how great they are is egotistic? That doesn't make sense. That's just poor writing. Now he goes out there and whatever. Listen, twice in a row, Ricochet has kind of made Logan Paul look dumb. We know why, Mike, because Ricochet's not winning this match at SummerSlam. Once again, more predictable nonsense.
Yeah, more predictable nonsense. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But what else? I got two other things to say. The whole thing with you give Tozawa if you could mix Tozawa and Crews together, you'd have a heck of a wrestler, right? That's number one. And number two, I like when Bronson Reed did the Oklahoma Stampede, and he said and Corey Graves said he just channeled Dr. Death Steve Williams. That was a great line because you look at Bronson Reed, and in that moment he looked with his long hair and his beard and the way he's got his beard done, he looked like Dr. Death Steve Williams. So that was a great line, and if I were Bronson Reed, I would start using that Oklahoma Stampede.
Yeah, maybe he will. Listen, he got the victory. I just don't think he looked good in the victory because of the way Ciampa sold him, which was basically not at all. Basically not at all. We were supposed to have Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. That turned into just Liv Morgan getting beat down. And I guess they're going to sell that Liv Morgan's arms were broke or fractured. Here's the problem with that. I'd love to know how anybody thinks putting that chair the way she put that chair and stepping and stomping on it is going to break somebody's arm. She'd have been better off just hammering her arm with the chair, because one kick like that with your arm in that chair, it might pinch your arm, might leave your arm black and blue, might do a little bit of muscle soreness or damage. It's not breaking your arm. It's just not breaking your arm. And you got to make up your mind what you want to do with Liv Morgan. Either Liv Morgan is a psychopath who laughs when she gets injured, or she's a crybaby who cries for 25 minutes. Because I'm getting tired of one week it's one thing and one week it's another. She's backstage at the trainer's thing. She's actually very annoying. She's an annoying character. I hate to say it, but Liv Morgan's a very annoying character. I've said this when she was the face champion before. She comes off annoying. She comes off as the girl that nobody invites to the parties because they can't deal with her for a long period of time. But she's annoying. So now, on the other hand, Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville come off the exact way they're supposed to come off, which is annoying. I do have a major problem with one thing, though, and let me address this and see what you guys think. I'm getting tired, and I think it's going to hurt her career, of all of the female wrestlers, with one or two exceptions, being afraid of Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley's been beaten dozens of times early on in her career in the WWE. She's not bigger than Charlotte Flair. She's not stronger than Bianca Belair. She's not bigger than Raquel Rodriguez. She's not the biggest or the heaviest woman or the strongest woman. And I don't know why you're insisting on making every single female act like, oh, no, Rhea Ripley showed up, let me run away, like she's the Undertaker. If you really want to do some empowerment of the women's division, you got to have these women say, you're walking around here like I'm supposed to be afraid of you. I got news for you, honey. I was winning titles when you were dropping matches for hot dog money. So, step it up. It's time to do that. You can't have a whole federation, with the exception of maybe Charlotte Flair, afraid of Rhea Ripley, including half the men. Because I think eventually people are just going to say, well, that's stupid. If they're all afraid of her, why do they even want to fight her then? They just ignore her. So, I don't know, Mike. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other with that.
Right, and that's the thing. And I mean, even look at her versus Zoe Stark. Zoe Stark is bigger than her, right? So it is what it is with it. And as far as the broken arm deal, I get when they put the leg or the ankle into that chair and stomp on the chair. Okay, that could do some damage, right? Ligaments and maybe do some damage to the bone. The better thing to do would not to be hitting her with the flat of the chair, would be to jam the top of the chair into the arm.
Right. Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Now, granted, she can't do what Alexa Bliss can do, because remember when Alexa Bliss had her arm broken or whatever, or appeared because she could, I guess she could dislocate her arm or something.
I don't know what it is that she did.
Nobody can, I guarantee you, nobody can do what Alexa Bliss can do in that manner.
No, she's obviously double jointed or something. She can throw her arm out or something at will, which is really weird. But at least, Tom, you got to make it look like something really might break your arm. That, to me, they put it over somebody's head and stomp it. If it doesn't break your neck, how the hell is it going to break your arm?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm going to go back to what you were saying, because Liv Morgan is very annoying, and she's not a good actress. And, I mean, they already took the belts away from them, so, you know, to injure them to be, you know, off TV or whatever the case is, that's, you know, if they're going to put her with Bray Wyatt, if they're going to turn her against Raquel, then she needs to learn her, you know, her acting. She needs to brush up on her acting. But you brought up a very interesting point, because Tozawa is afraid of Rhea Ripley, which is great. That is very entertaining to me. This is a good, really good way to bring Tamina Snuka back. Have Rhea Ripley do something horrible to Tozawa, and she says, "I'm the most dominant woman in the WWE. There's nobody that can beat me." Out comes Tamina, and oh shit!
Do it even better than that. Have her chase Tozawa. You know, Tozawa runs from her, right? So have her chase Tozawa and run headlong into Tamina. And then have Tamina be that person who says, "I don't know why everybody's afraid of you, but I'm not." And maybe that should be the first person that Rhea Ripley's like, "I don't know, she's pretty big and very strong, and maybe she's a little intimidated by Tamina." Now, Tamina can't win. You got to keep Rhea strong, but that's still a great feud, Todd, and that would work out.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, this would be a great way to bring back Tamina Snuka and have a girl like her to go up against, have a feud with Rhea Ripley to stick up for Tozawa.
Agreed, 100%. Mike, that would be an awesome opportunity for Tamina Snuka to at least get a match. She can't win it, but at least get a match.
And, yeah, I mean, look, she's supposed to be, Rhea Ripley is supposed to be a powerful, powerful girl, a lady, you know. And we know what Tamina is. I mean, she's the definition of a power wrestler, right? Yeah, she can do that superfly splash, whatever, this, that, and the other. But she's basically your general big girl power wrestler, right? So
yes,
that would be an excellent match. Yeah, you're right. Tamina can't win, but Tamina can be made to look good, and it could help
her
career a little bit. You know.
Well, that's my point. Okay, she can't win, but if she does well against Rhea Ripley, you could ignite her career a little bit to say, well, she's still in the mix. Right now, she's sitting at catering doing nothing. I mean, it's ridiculous. Drew McIntyre comes face to face with Gunther. I actually had a few people write me and say, "Wasn't that a good segment?" No, it was not a good segment. I'm going to be very honest. I like Gunther in the sense that he's an old school worker. He works very old school, and I love that about him. And I do like watching him wrestle. He's hard hitting. He doesn't oversell. Everything he does looks like it hurts. There's no fluff. There's no nonsense. It's just straight to the point. But, man, is he bad on a microphone. He is insufferably bad on the microphone. And last night, I think Drew McIntyre was legitimately mad at him. For not getting any heat. Did you hear that, audience? There was no heat for Gunther. Zero heat for Gunther. And at one point, Drew McIntyre actually says what Mike was saying. He says, "Hey, Ludwig Kaiser should be the leader of this. At least he's got a little bit of charisma. You're like listening to paint dry." And I'm not 100% sure that was a scripted line. I think that was Drew McIntyre saying, "Could you get me just a little bit of a pop? Is there anything that you can say that will ignite this crowd to get chanting, you know, McIntyre or something, because you're just standing there doing nothing. You're making me do all the work in this promo. I really think McIntyre was a little upset, because that's a pretty stark line to say, listen, you're as boring as watching paint dry. This guy should be the leader. At least he's got some charisma. At least he can use a microphone. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. So, I don't know. This is Gunther's downfall. I have a problem with Gunther, and that is when he loses, I don't know what you're going to do, because his whole entire persona is predicated on he doesn't lose. As soon as he loses, people are going to say, okay, I saw him lose, and now he's boring. I really believe that, because he cannot use that microphone. And he doesn't seem to have any facial expressions. He doesn't seem to be able to sell any emotion of any kind. It's a problem. Kaiser does not have that problem. So we ended up with Ludwig Kaiser versus Drew McIntyre. McIntyre gave him a lot of offense, really good. And then after the match, Ludwig loses, obviously. After the match, Vinci and Gunther both jump in. They're beating the hell out of McIntyre. Out comes Matt Riddle, who lasts about 1 second in the ring. They've given up on Matt Riddle. He lasts about a second and a half in the ring and gets destroyed by Gunther. And then Drew McIntyre recovers, puts Gunther through a table, and, drops the belt on him. I don't know what to tell you. All I know is this. I like watching Gunther wrestle, but you need to limit what he does on the microphone. You need to have Kaiser talk for him, because when he tries, Drew McIntyre is absolutely right. He can't get the audience to get the face any pop. You know how good, like, Logan Paul is at that? He'll come out and say two or three things, and you're like, oh, I just can't wait for a good guy to come out here and shut him up, right? No. There's Gunther just saying, if you want to ride on my coattails, okay. Oh, thanks. Thanks for the energy. Thanks for the effort you're putting into trying to get me a pop, Gunther. There's a real problem, Tom.
The only good part about that segment was Kaiser's facial expression when McIntyre said, this guy should be the leader. You're like watching paint dry. I'm also not 100% sure that was scripted, because Kaiser's expression was like, and they looked at each other like Kaiser and Gunther looked at each other like, he was like, yeah, you know, he's kind of right. That was the only part for me where I was like, okay, this might get good. And again, it fell flat. I mean, Kaiser had a ton of offense against Drew McIntyre, and it was a good match. But you're also absolutely right when they have when you say they've given up on Matt Riddle, and you know, with good reason. Why push a man who's not?
Yeah, he didn't do himself any favors, Tom. That's for sure. He didn't do himself any favors. Yeah, but I mean, they literally had to hand the microphone to Kaiser to save this segment, Mike, because Gunther was getting Drew McIntyre no pop at all.
Obviously, and that's the thing. And I think it's time. Yeah, he's supposed to be this big leader and all that stuff, but Kaiser is, and we know what this is supposed to be, right? We know what they're supposed to be, right? They're either supposed to be, well, right, Nazi. Basically, what Gunther's supposed to be is what's his name that came goose stepping down to the ring, and
Baron Von Roschke type,
Baron Roschke, but again, Baron Roschke had more charisma than Gunther has. That's the difference, you know?
Gunther is so low-key, he doesn't want to even – Gunther is so low-key, he doesn't even want to do heel shtick. That's the thing. He's so low-key, he just wants to say, like, okay, I will face you in the ring and you will lose. He doesn't want to come off and say, dig any dirt. He doesn't want to – try to, like, shoot. He doesn't want to do any of that. I don't know, man. I worry that once he loses, Todd, that might be the end for Gunther as far as a big push.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, we've been saying this for a while about Gunther. He's not good on the mic. He's terrible. And like we said about Geyser, if his name is, he's better than on the mic than Gunther. And last night on the announce table, Corey Graves did Geyser's impersonation. Pretty funny.
Which was funny the first time. It was funny when he did it the first time, but then he kept right on doing it. It wasn't funny after a little while. And the reason it's not funny is the first time it was funny because it felt like he was just impersonating his voice. The second and third time, it felt like he was just trying to do the character and saying anybody could do this character, which, you know, is a little disrespectful. So, I don't know. We had a segment with the Viking Raiders and the Alpha Academy that was pretty funny. Maxine finally got to say a few words and basically threatened Sarah Logan. Sarah Logan did a good job on her rebuttal to it. I'm looking forward to that. Alpha Academy is fun to listen to. I like the Viking Raiders. I like Sarah Logan. So that was a good segment. We then get to the contract signing, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be because Finn Balor did something I didn't expect him to do, and that is he kind of got real again and said, look, I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of setbacks. For I don't know how many years it's been one right after the other, and truthfully, I blame you. And there's a little bit of logic to that because he was the champion, and then right after he got hurt and came back, they didn't do nothing with him. And, yeah, I could see him logically saying, I blame you for all of the problems I've been through in my career. Then there was a sneak attack, obviously, with everybody beating him down. Sami Zayn came down to help. That didn't help too much. And at the end, Judgment Day is basically standing strong. That's a good segment. That's an overall good segment to end Raw with. Raw wasn't crap this week, but it was nowhere near the strength of the week before. Last week's Raw was an A-plus show. This week's Raw, I don't think scratches even the surface of it. I'm going to give it a – because of the fact that the matches were so predictable and you made them predictable, that's the thing. There's people who say, well, I knew who was going to win. Yeah, but it wasn't rubbed right in your face. That's the difference. It's one thing if you go to a movie and say, well, I kind of know, I think, who done it. But if right in the beginning somebody whispers, the second time I saw this movie and the butler did it, you're going to be like, well, I kind of thought the butler did it, but now you really ruined it, right? Well, when you put stupid stipulations that no one will ever do in a match, yeah, okay, we know who's winning. When you literally tell somebody, don't interfere in my match, I don't expect to see you, well, you know you're going to see them. When you literally have the North American champion just won it, defending the title, not against a contender, but literally against another champion where you're like, he's not going to win it, then you already know he's not going to win it. So the problem is it was so ridiculously predictable. I don't mind when people say, I predicted all the wrestling matches right. Yeah, okay, maybe you're very good at it and you're a fan. But you didn't get it rubbed right in your face. A child could have predicted these. You don't need to be a big wrestling fan to predict these. You could sit with a non-wrestling fan, and when Tommaso Ciampa says, I don't expect you to interfere in my match, a non-wrestling fan is going to be like, he's going to interfere in his match. Or when, well, the stipulation is, if you lose, you got to put a tattoo of me on your body, a non-wrestling fan is going to be like, they're not doing that, so they're going to win. You don't even have to be a wrestling fan. So that's where it becomes, there's a difference between, I'm a big enough wrestling fan to confidently predict an outcome, as in anyone in the world could predict an outcome. That's what Monday Night Raw was last night. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a C-. I thought it was passable, Mike, but nowhere near what last week was.
No, I got to give it a C-minus as well. I'll give you a good example. There's a certain movie that came out way back when by the name of Clue. Made from a game, but by the name of Clue. And what they did at the end of the movie is that somehow they filmed three different endings, right? And they said,
yep.
Okay, here's what happened. Here's how it could have happened, but it didn't. Here's how it could have happened, but it didn't. And here's what really happened, right? And
yeah,
it was a fun movie. It was a fun movie. It was a novel thing to do at the time. You know, it was, and that's what made it a little bit fun. But this is not that. This is, you know what's going to happen. You know how it's going to, basically how it's going to happen because of what's said. That's the thing. And look, I agree with you about what you call it, and it helps out that feud with the Viking Raiders and the Alpha Academy that Maxine is pretty good on the mic. You know, she can hold her own on the mic with Sarah Logan now.
Yeah, she did a good job. Yeah, the thing is, Mike, I don't mind if a wrestling match is predictable to a longtime fan. I don't mind if, you know, you're sitting down with a non-fan and you say, I called every one of these matches. But the non-fan is like, I don't know how you knew those. But when a non-fan can say, based on what I just heard, or based on what I just saw, this is going to happen, isn't it? Yeah, well, then that's too predictable. If anybody can predict it, then that's too predictable, Tom. And that's exactly what Raw was last night. What's your rating?
Yeah, it was definitely predictable, if I could just choose one word. This smelled of Vince McMahon's fingerprints all over it, and it wasn't as nearly good as last week. Last week was an A+. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I couldn't predict not one match last week, honestly, especially the Alpha Academy. So for that, I mean, I'm going to give it a C- as well. I mean, this show this week fell flat.
Yeah, it felt kind of just thrown together. I don't know. There was a couple of moments that were good, Todd, but overall it was just a kind of a plain run.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was okay, man. You know, it's just one of those things where it's not good. And like I said, I'm going to give it a C- as well.
I do want to end by saying one thing. I had a guy write to me and say, is Drew McIntyre a bomb in the WWE? Has he lost all of his momentum? The crowd doesn't seem to be into him at all anymore, and he used to be. You can blame Gunther for that. See, this is what I'm trying to say. When Dominic Mysterio comes out and says, I'm the greatest this and that and the other thing, and here's my video package, and I want to be treated with respect now, and I don't want any of you stupid fans to boo me and blah, 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 and then you hear Sami Zayn's music, he's just sold Sami Zayn. This crowd is all behind Sami Zayn because he has just worked some magic, and whoever's going to stick their head out there to tell him off, the crowd's behind. Gunther never does that. So last night, Drew McIntyre was just left out there to fend for himself, and you saw what happened. It was a dead segment that had to be saved literally by Kaiser. So no, I don't think Drew McIntyre is dead. I think that Gunther needs to learn how to get some heat to help sell his opponent. He's got the rest of it down. Let's see if he can do it. We'll be back here on Friday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.